Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Just Gwen and Scraby. 5 o'clock on the dot. Little Maction getting ready to take off. Northern Illinois taking on Miami of Ohio.
Do you know what Northern Illinois' mascot is? Illinois, I should say.
Huskies?
I think they're the Salukis.
They are the Salukis.
Okay.
Yes.
I know when it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, I hope this is not
Wait,
a word.
No, it might be. It might be the Huskies.
Let me see.
I think it might be the Huskies.
Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
They do have a Husky as their logo too.
Thought it looked like a dog.
I like it when you and Jesse do that on the broadcast, try to figure out what team names are.
I've had to get my mascot game up because for the first couple years I'd be like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But then over COVID, you start hearing some of the same ones. You can always rely on an eagle or because there's a bunch of those out there.
You can rely on like I'm trying to think.
There's some. The Huskies are quite.
Huskies, yes, definitely.
That's like there's at least three.
Eagle, definitely.
Eagle.
The Dolphins. No,
I don't know that there's a dolphin.
Anyway,
nonetheless, into the happy hour.
Broncos is a good one. Boise State Broncos. Western Michigan Broncos.
Broncos, another one. I think there's another one in there too. Santa Clara. Are they the Broncos?
They might be. They might be.
Yeah. Anyway, Matt Snyder will join us here next segment. Get to talk to him a little bit about how he voted and what went through his mind as he selected Paul Skeens. He was not alone. One of 23. So, I mean, we're kind of in the minority in terms of how we view this thing.
Yeah, we are.
So
we definitely are.
There's that. Mike Schilt also was runner-up. Today.
We're number two. We're number two, as Tyler said on the chat earlier.
Mr. Murphy of the Brewers took home the Manager of the Year. Pat Murphy came home with the Manager of the Year award this year. Mike Schilt finished second. Third was Carlos Mendoza from the New York Mets was the third place winner. I believe Torrey Lovello finished just outside. I think he finished fourth. He had one second-place vote by none other than Barry Bloom.
No, it was Keith Law.
I'm sorry, Keith Law. Bloom had he had Skeens. Skeens won. Merrill, two.
We had a
number one pick, national presence.
We had an Oliver Marmol from Keith Law.
Oliver, that's the one that is a little bit head-scratching, right?
I mean, you made some good points about how they didn't finish terrible, but...
They didn't. I think, you know...
But no one's talking about Oliver Marmol.
If you remember, if you take your Padre minds back, it was that series in Pittsburgh that Jackson Merrill actually put himself...
Don't ask me why my mind
works. You're about to turn
back time. There's probably a lot of Chris Ello on those buttons over there.
Oh, yeah. You want me to...
I love kickers.
Hello.
Scraby's point is really good.
I'm a clown.
Name and logo.
I wanted to congratulate my favorite college football coach, Nick Saban.
Cornholing.
Howdy do.
Chill, son.
That's pretty funny.
That's a lot.
That's pretty funny. I like that.
But anyway, back. Turn back time is what we're doing.
Yeah. No, I think if you go back to that time frame, that is when Jackson Merrill actually made it a race. He went to Pittsburgh. I think he had in two, maybe all three of those games, at least two of those three games, he factored in late with a big hit, big homer.
Didn't he go? He take one deep off of Bednar?
Yep. And then they went to Miami and he proceeded to do the same exact thing.
He did.
That was the trip I wasn't on. I just remember coming home or catching the like seventh inning on and him doing something ridiculous. He almost did something in the last game. I remember as we were driving home, he came up in a big spot. It was like the first time in the 6-game road trip that he didn't actually do something. But that was the road trip, ironically, Pittsburgh, that started him on the national kind of stage. They're on the East Coast. Playing, you know, East Coast time zone, and he put on a show.
He did, but no one noticed because the Pirates are terrible and no one watches the Pirates.
Well, no, they noticed because that's, if you remember, that's when all the conversation started. What happened was, I think after we went back to the East Coast one more time, Tampa was on that trip. From that point on, we were on the West Coast the rest of the year, even on the road trips. And, you know, just as it was from basically March to August, he had been doing the same work in that time frame, just nobody was talking about it. He went to the East Coast, just to prove my point, he went to the East Coast for a week. And when he came back from that week, the conversation had completely changed about Rookie of the Year. In that time, Paul Skeens wasn't throwing the ball like great like he was early. But then he came back home. Jackson Merrill continues to do his same thing, but he's on the West Coast now. Paul Skeens starts to throw the ball better. He's on the East Coast. You know,
how much does it factor in that Paul Skeens ducked Jackson Merrill in the two the two matchups that they had?
I can't with you, dude.
I mean, he goes to Pittsburgh, doesn't face Jackson Merrill. Pittsburgh comes to San Diego a week later, doesn't face Jackson Merrill.
Dude, his spot in the rotation was not up. Knock it off.
Well, he's so great, he can pitch on 3 days rest.
Oh, now you want the man out there jeopardizing his career pitching on 3 days rest.
Yes. To prove yes, that he is the best rookie. That is kind of a bummer that the two rookies of the year,
they never faced off.
They never faced off. Yeah. And they will face off, but might have to be at a different date years from now. Who knows, Tony? Who knows?
Either way, it didn't go the Padres' way. We got Matt Snyder coming on to talk a little bit about it. We'll talk a little bit about Mike Schilt finishing second. Plus, what the Padres have in store for this upcoming offseason. It's been relatively quiet in terms of what direction are the Padres going. I don't think we honestly know. You know,
we know
they need a pitcher with Joe out.
A left fielder?
It would seem they need a left fielder because Jerick Profar very well may have priced himself out of coming back.
A shortstop?
We'll see. Possibly a shortstop. Xander could be the answer.
A catcher?
I don't, at least, well, we don't know.
A backup.
That's what I'm saying. We don't know. We don't know what we don't know what the market is going to look like for Kyle Higashioka. We don't know. I don't know what shortstop's available. I mean, it was like, what, last year or 2 years ago, all the shortstops were free agents all at the same time. And the Padres got one. They got Xander.
Yes, they did. So but now Xander doesn't play shortstop.
So, I mean, there is a lot of, I think, unanswered questions. More so than there was going in the last offseason when you knew Padres had to tighten their belt a little bit. They probably had to move Juan Soto. I think there's probably even more questions.
Are you willing to take a prove-it deal on Tim Anderson at this point?
A prove-it deal?
Like, are you still a major league player deal? Like, minimum?
I mean, you could take a flyer for minimum.
I'm that guy, and that's why maybe I lose in fantasy football, because I'm like, I feel like this is a good value. It's good value. He's going to be okay.
It's only good value if he turns into, like, you know, being an everyday shortstop.
Being the guy he was back a couple years ago. The other shortstops on the free agent market, Willy Adames, which he's not going to be a Padre. He's going to make a lot of money with some other team. Jose Iglesias, we talked about. He's probably not a shortstop this anymore in his career. Paul DeYoung, Kevin Newman, Ahmed Rosario, Nick
Newman
Ahmed.
Newman signed.
Oh, yes, it does say that right next to it. L.A. Angels. Brandon Crawford, he's probably too old.
You didn't want to say it that way.
Aledmys Diaz and, Tim Anderson. So not many free agent shortstops on the market either. However, Leo Dallas DeVries has moved up past Ethan Salas in the Baseball America rankings.
I got to say that I'm not surprised by that.
Really?
I'm not. I tend when I'm around listening to scouts talk about players, I try to listen to the words and the tone they have when they're talking about. Scouts are very similar. Like when they're talking about a guy, they're pretty passionate about it. And you can just kind of get a feel for it. And DeVries has been so impressive to at least in everybody I've talked to that it's just a different type of conversation when you're talking about DeVries versus Salas. Salas, you got to remember, is I don't want to call him a baby, but he is young.
So is DeVries.
How old is DeVries?
18.
How old is Salas now?
18?
18? No, so they're about the same age.
I always forget how old he is.
It seems to me, and I haven't seen DeVries yet up close in person, but it seems to me he's more advanced offensively. I haven't seen his glove work yet, but I
DeVries
hear that.
Just turned 18 on October 11th.
So he's young, too. And I'm telling you, the way they are talking about DeVries is different than they're talking about Salas.
You can't tell.
And
you
Salas
can.
Has been around for, a couple years now. He's been in pro ball for a little bit. They're talking about DeVries differently.
Now, how much of that is because he's playing a position that's much more difficult?
Catching is. There's so much more on his plate. So that certainly could be a part of it. But just the energy that you hear when guys are talking about DeVries is different. It's definitely different.
That's good. That's
so,
a good note.
To see here that he's moved past Salas as the Padres, top prospect, I imagine? Because Salas was one. So that means Salas moves to two.
Yeah, according to Baseball America.
So, we'll see if the other publications fall in line with that.
Trevor is asking DeVries, or he's stating, DeVries may be on the roster if he has a good spring training.
I think it would be wishful thinking, but you never know, man.
Jackson Merrill.
You know what I'm saying?
But they did it right with Jackson Merrill because they did not bring him up.
Right. Jackson Merrill had, it seemed like he was having a year. Every year he was healthy, he was balling.
Yeah, because I know that he got sick there one of those years, and it was not easy for him. But he, I had no idea what he was going to do. But ever since he started spring training, he looked great for the Padres. Great. And you know what's so funny is we were watching highlights of him playing shortstop the other day. I can't even imagine Jackson Merrill playing
shortstop.
You've
never shortstop. Seen it.
Yeah, because I've never seen it. I don't even know how good he is at shortstop. I'm sure he's great at shortstop, but I can't imagine it in my head. I mean, think about his range in the outfield. That range translates to the infield.
I don't know how it translates. To be honest with you, I've seen him play far more outfield than I have infield. So it's even hard for me to see it, but clearly he was there at one point. All right, let's get to break. On the other side, Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, will join us. We'll get a chance to grill him a little bit on his pick. We're going to Chris on the other side. Here's some traffic.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Perfect. .519 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scrape. Crisello, traffic got the best of him. He will not get to Riverside in time.
I think I said that.
So he will miss out on the chance to talk to our next guest. Matt Snyder joins us, CBS Sports. Matt, thank you for coming on. And I have to start with, before we last time, you kind of let us know that you had a vote. And
yeah.
I remember hearing your tone change a little bit as you talked about Jackson Merrill and Paul Skeens. And after you got off, I told the guys, I was like, I just don't have a good feeling about Matt's vote here. I think it's going Skeens just based on the tone and tenor that he had. And sure enough, Paul Skeens. And listen, let's be fair about this. You weren't close to being the only one. 23 first place votes for Paul Skeens. So this was a pretty clear cut thing for most riders. My question for you, Matt, is what went into your thought process in terms of going with Skeens over Jackson Merrill?
Well, I didn't know that I was going to have to deal with this right now, so I have to go. Man, if you could read me that well, then I'm either was really terrible at hiding it, or you should be on like Survivor or something.
I do consider myself I'd be pretty good on Survivor, I must say. But
okay,
go ahead.
Cool. I thought it was, it's going to sound wishy-washy, I thought it was an incredibly difficult decision, and I have a column up where I kind of sorted it out. And generally speaking, I do go for position players over pitchers. I just thought Skeens was so dominant that he got a little bit of a bump up over Merrill there. And, I mean, look, Merrill was so clutch, and we talked about the six home runs that tied or won the game eighth inning or later. That was huge. I can't believe that he learned center field in spring training and did such a good job with it during the regular season, but he'd never played there before. I thought it was incredible. I wish that I would have had a slot for a position player and a pitcher, but it came down to it. I had to pick one, and I thought a sub-2 ERA from Skeens, all those double-digit strikeout games when he was held back early in the season, I thought he got enough workload, 133 innings, over 500 batters face, that it got him into the ballpark with Merrill. And I thought once he was there, he was the more dominant player. And I still, when I sent it in, wasn't even sure about it. And I did think, and I included this in my column, one thought I had was, I think Skeens is going to win comfortably, and it should be closer than it's going to end up. But I don't think that I should vote based on Skeens should win, but it should be closer, so I'm going to vote for Merrill. It's like trying to figure out the rest of the voting body. I shouldn't do that. I think I should vote for who I thought was the best rookie. And I thought that Skeens was the more dominant and therefore best rookie. But again, it was incredibly close, and I thought that the vote should have been closer. But maybe it was a bunch of people who kind of were in the same boat with me. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll go with – I'm a Bears fan. I think that what happened on Sunday, if I said, hey, everybody tell me who won between the Bears and Packers, everybody would say the Packers. Just because 30 people said the Packers won doesn't mean it was a blowout. It was a very, very close game.
Right.
That's what I felt about this vote. It was very, very close, and just because a lot more people voted Skeens for first place doesn't mean that he blew Merrill out on the field.
I will say I think that's how it should be voted. I think you should be voting just as if you're the only one voting, and I think that's how you get your best answer down on the sheet of paper. Let me ask you this. If Merrill gets to 30 homers, do you think that changes the conversation, or was Paul Skeens so dominant? As you mentioned, under a 2 ERA, you just don't see that very often, especially from a guy who just got drafted last year. Or was that just too much dominance to overcome when it was all said and done?
Well, I mean, that one's tough because I don't get into whole numbers as much, like if it's 29 versus 30 home runs or something like that. But I mean, you're talking about six more home runs of production.
Right.
So,
which probably gets him over the 100.
He's probably pushing his average over 300, probably pushing the RBIs over 100.
Yeah.
That's a whole different resume there. And given that I said it was so close, maybe that would have put him over the top. It's hard for me to say exactly now because, like, I voted and I wrote the column before the playoffs even started, and it's been a long time since then, and I've been, like, thinking a lot more about the Hall of Fame now than the vote. But thinking about where I was and how close I thought it was, it wouldn't have been the round number as much as how much more overall production that would have meant that Merrill had. I think it probably would have been enough, yeah.
We're talking to Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, here on 97.3 The Fan, and you've kind of taken all the wind out of my sails because I knew you were going to justify your points, and I knew that you were going to have numbers and you were going to have reasons for it and all of that. I guess I'm asking because I know everybody takes their vote seriously. I'm not asking if they're not taking the vote seriously, but is there any sort of criteria that they give you to vote upon, or is it just who is the best player in your mind?
It's essentially who's the best player. Like, it's, you're supposed to take certain things into account. I don't have it pulled up in front of me right now, but the basic gist is it is the best player as long as he's qualified as a rookie. And now, because there have been mistakes in the past, now there's a drop down. I forget, it was somebody on the Cubs got a really messed up vote, and it came out that the voter meant to put somebody else that had a name similar. So now we have a drop down box. You can't, like, just type in the name anymore. It's a drop-down box.
that's funny.
But, you know, other than that, it's – like I said, I'd have to pull it up to find the specific wording, and there are instructions, but it is essentially just who's the best player in your mind. So it's open to interpretation in terms of how do you define the best player, or how do you measure a pitcher versus a position player. It's all kind of left up to the voter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Matt Snyder joins us here, CBS Sports. Matt, let's talk a little bit about this upcoming free agency. I would go into the manager, but Padres finished second in that one as well with Mike Schilt.
We're the best runner-up, Matt. We're the best runner-up out there.
Falling behind Murphy for the Brewers. But this free agency for the Padres doesn't seem as straightforward as last year. That's surprising, right? Because last year there was a ton of questions. You knew the Padres were tightening their belt. They were likely going to have to move Juan Soto, and they did that. And A.J. Preller did it as well as you could possibly do it. Now you fast forward to this year. Don't know as much in terms of what they're going to be spending, what they're not going to be spending. We do know that some contracts on the books are already scheduled for pay raises. They have an open left field spot. They currently have an open shortstop spot. They certainly have to get a starting pitcher to replace Joe Musgrove, who most likely will miss all of 2025. How do you see this one shaping out? Because I know last year when we talked to you, we knew going in that AJ had a lot of work to do. He might have as much work to do this year.
Man, that just the way that you painted that, it makes it all the more that much of a bummer that they didn't win either games four or games five in the NLDS, because, like, man, the World Series is right there for the taking. I feel like Profar is going to be a high priority because it's such a good fit. He's comfortable there. He's coming off a career year. Maybe there's a hometown discount there. Not that he should give one because this is going to be his one big payday.
Yeah.
But I feel like Profar is going to be some level of a priority there. It's hard to know what they're going to do money-wise because it looks like it's a bit under $200 million right now, and you know they could probably go to $240 or $250, but in terms of the luxury tax, because of the way it's figured with all those future contracts, they're actually already over the luxury tax.
Yeah.
So are they just going to say, screw it, who cares, just do whatever? And I'm sure you guys have spoken about this a lot, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
In terms of pitching, the one-year Band-Aid for Musgrove, maybe you go for somebody with high upside like a Nathan Eovaldi type. Again, it's so hard to know what the parameters are going to be on what they're looking to sign there. Shane Bieber coming off Tommy John surgery, kind of a lottery ticket. I'm sure he won't be ready for the start of the year, but, you know, middle of May, the Padres survived with a lot of injuries last year.
Yeah, they did.
And by the end of the year, Bieber could be a stud. And he's probably, like I said, looking for like a one-year deal to rebuild his value after Tommy John surgery. So maybe that's the pool you're swimming in.
Yeah. Walker Buehler may be in that pool
like
as well.
What's that?
I said Walker Buehler may be in
Walker
that
Buehler,
one-year,
100%.
One-year
yes.
pool as well.
Walker Buehler's in there. I don't know if the Diamondbacks would do this, but if they're willing to eat almost all of Jordan Montgomery's money, you might as well just say, hey, we'll throw you a something for Jordan Montgomery because he's somebody else who's looking to rebuild his value. It's interesting to see. And again, if you're looking at the trade instead of free agency and profar walks, maybe Brent Rooker, you don't know how much the A's are going to request for him. His payday is not going to shatter the payroll. It's going to be really interesting to see how things shake out. And another name to watch, as you mentioned, shortstop. Again, you're going with high risk, but the Padres are comfortable here, right? Like, you're used to being in the high risk area. And if assuming the Blue Jays don't sign Juan Soto, which I don't think they're going to, they might as well start trading, right? And Bo Bichette is 1 year away from free agency. Terrible terror last year. So he's not going to get the extension he wants from the Blue Jays. Maybe they won't get a ton for him. Hey, you might as well try Bo Bichette at shortstop for a year and see what you get. That would be another one in that same kind of ballpark where I might look.
We're talking to Matt Snyder here of CBS Sports. And last one for me, Matt. I'm going to go back a little bit to the voting. I wish I would have thought of this question earlier, but we've been talking on the show about how some of the awards, like all MLB, is voted upon by coaches and people that are in the dugout. Why do you think the awards that hold the most weight are the media-based voting awards?
That's just the way it started, I guess. Whenever way back when the awards started giving out by BBWAA, and then it just kind of became the thing that this is the MVP award and so on. Major League Baseball is doing the thing right now on MLB Network where they host that show that was last week, hosted by Roy Wood Jr., who was great, by the way. I wish people would sell his jokes more because he does a great job. They're starting to kind of push their own awards, like the All-MLB team and all that. But I still think these just hold the most weight because that's what everybody's used to. They're used to talking about the Cy Young and the MVP award. I will say this. Maybe I'm biased because I am a writer. I still think we're the best suited to do it because the players during the season are playing. They're not paying attention to some of the stuff that I might be mentioning on the awards. And I'm sitting here. I'm the one that's sitting at a computer looking up all these stats and thinking about it all the time. They're thinking about playing. Coaches are game planning.
That's fair.
Managers are game planning. We're the ones that are thinking about it all the time. And I also think that we're probably pretty representative too. I know that people yell and scream about votes a lot of times, but usually if you take polls on the internet or wherever, it usually pretty well lines up with how the votes shake out.
I think that's fair. I for one, don't necessarily think the players would get it right all the time.
Coaches? You know,
I think coaches would do a better job. But as as Matt said, Matt, though, they don't, the players and coaches are doing their job. So they are going to see everybody. It's going to see highlights most of the time.
And they and the coaches and managers have voted on the gold gloves forever. And we've heard so much
that's
about
also
how bad
true.
The gold glove votes are. And one of my favorite ones is Rafael Palmeiro when he won the Gold Glove and he played like 19 games at first base. That's what you get when you have the coaches voting.
They just assumed he was out there for all the games.
Well, somebody did a study once that was like, all things being equal, usually the best offensive player would win Gold Glove.
100%.
Because the coaches 100%. Aren't used to scouting the defense as much as they're used to game planning against opposing, because you can't vote for your own players. So you only vote for opposing players. They're used to game planning against the offense. They don't pay attention to defense as much. You see Rafael Palmeiro on there, and you're like, oh, man, he must be a stud defender because he's so good at hitting. So, yeah.
All right, Matt, I got one more for you. I told you I was going to hold your feet to the fire, but this one isn't really on you or anything like that. Paul Skeens was also up for – he's also up for Cy Young, which is being given out tomorrow. Would that be egregious if he won the Cy Young Award, or do you think he's going to win the Cy Young Award?
No.
Okay, that would be egregious.
The shortfall in workload is just way too much there because of how good Wheeler and Sale were both. He should finish third place, and I expect that he will. If he beat out Sale and Wheeler there, that would be atrocious. Because, like, on a rate basis, he was just as good as they were, right? But it's 133 innings versus
– That's right.
Wheeler was around 200. Sale was, what, 170-ish. 180?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of innings when you're – similar to those guys.
Yeah.
So,
a lot can happen
no
in those innings,
that.
Too.
Yes, for 100%.
Sure. Matt, as always, man, I expected nothing but you standing on 10 toes after after your vote, and that's exactly what you did. We always appreciate you coming on and spending time with us, my man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Snyder, CBS Sport, standing on 10 on his vote. He had reasonable evidence.
Yeah, the chat's not too happy with us just accepting it, but I tried. Well, I mean, what am I going to do? The guy gave us his explanation. I can't, yell at
him. What did the chat want you to ask?
Oh, no, it wasn't, about questions. It was more of, oh, man, that's just an easy answer, which I kind of feel those things at times.
What was he going to say?
No, but Matt Snyder, I will tell everybody right now, Matt Snyder is the perfect person to have on because he will give us the truth. He's not going to sugarcoat
it because
he's in San Diego.
Matt Snyder is probably as unbiased as anybody can be. He's what, East Coast? He's on the East?
He's in Indiana.
Midwest.
Yeah.
So, I disagree with 23 people voting schemes, but it is what it is.
Oh my gosh, Tony. I got so locked into
it's 5:35, and your last question took us well beyond.
No,
I just want to point that out.
No, this is the 5 o'clock football hour is presented by Buffalo Wild Wings, where B-dubs is football. Visit Buffalo Wild Wings every Tuesday for buy one, get one half off traditional wings. There we go.
Want to take us a break now?
When we get back, we had a really nice interview with Dave Velasquez of the Aztecs men's basketball team. He had lots of energy. He talked about last night's game, so you'll hear that when we get back on Gwen and Chris, 97.3 The Fan.
Hi, San Diego. Head over to Buffalo Wild Wings for the
5:41 on the clock. Coming to an end of this wonderful four-hour show with me and Matt Scraby.
Oh, it's been so good. So good.
I was. There is an article out.
I'm a clown.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean that.
Called The Hater's Guide to Deion Sanders. I immediately looked at Scraby and said, dude, you wrote a piece and didn't tell me?
I didn't write it.
I mean, he didn't write it.
Although I did title it.
I certainly was about to read him a few excerpts from it, but we don't have time.
You can read one.
Okay, one. He picks apart a lot of the hate reasons to hate Deion Sanders. Last year's criticism, this was the one that I specifically picked out for Scraby. Sanders treated the former players poorly in terms of how he treated them on the way out when he arrived. That was one of Scraby's biggest pet peeves.
I hated that.
He really, and the article goes on to kind of slash this argument. It says, tell me you know nothing about college football without telling me. This is the criticism I'm most sensitive to because that's where the real life rubber meets the road in terms of how lives, families, and careers are affected. But that's been an unfortunate reality of the system that existed long before Coach Prime ever set foot on Folsom Field.
You know, people who say, tell me you don't know anything about college football without telling me, are the people who don't know anything about college football.
No, I think he's
That's just a fancy phrase.
I think he's describing you, Scraby. I don't think he's describing himself.
I think it's a fancy phrase.
Do you know anything about college football?
Yeah. Duh.
Let's get to our interview of the day. Before we do that, some traffic. But Coach Dave Velasquez joined us to talk a little bit about the aftermath of the Gonzaga defeat and where he sees this team going as we get into crunch time. Coach Dave Velasquez, San Diego State's assistant coach, joins us here on Gwen and Chris. Coach Velasquez, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Let's start with last night, a tough loss to a very, very good basketball team. I mean, from a staff point of view, you go into this game, you're not at your full strength, but there are certain things you want to see. What was it that you guys saw as a staff that was encouraging? What was it from a staff standpoint that you guys know you got to keep at a little bit?
Oh, there's a lot of things you learned from last night. I mean, obviously, we went into the game, like you had mentioned, that we're not at full strength. And then the game starts, and Miles Bird was banged up before the game had started, and then he's not even available, for basically half the game. And then Farrell Compton, who gave us really good minutes in the first half, he's only able to play 13 minutes, and he starts, cramping up. And then you have Magoon Gwath, who has foul trouble and has to play limited minutes with his 5 fouls. So, we don't have that many guys available. It's hard to beat anybody, and then especially one of the best teams in the country and especially a top-5 team at home that's the most experienced team in the country. And the last time we had a really experienced team like that, we went to a national championship game.
Yeah.
And that's how important the experience in college basketball has become, and especially nowadays in this new world that we're living in with the transfer portal. And so, we ran into a very, very good Gonzaga team, and they did a lot of good things against us that we're going to learn from and we're going to grow from, and we're going to steal some things that they did that helped them be successful, and we're going to put it in our own systems that we do. So, yeah, we learned a lot, though. And you always want to learn through winning. That's the number one thing San Diego State has done throughout the years. You know, this is not the first time we had expectations. We've been good for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And we expected to go into that game and win that game. There's no question about it. But at the end of the day, you have to try to learn through winning. And unfortunately, from last night, we have to learn through losing, which is okay, especially with this team that we have. You know, like Coach Dutch talked about after, it's not always going to go your way every single night. You know, there's not going to be a lot of teams that go undefeated throughout the season. And but as long as we learn from our mistakes last night, as long as we grow, then at the end of the day, you move on, and we know what our schedule is. And that's, if you want to be a top 25 program, if you want to be considered one of the elites, these are the type of schedules you play. And that's what our players signed up for when they came to San Diego State. And we expect to win these games.
We're talking to SDSU assistant men's basketball coach Dave Velasquez here on 97.3 The Fan. And I don't know if you were listening to us just before you came on, but I asked the question of expectations among fans. And if the fans, you know, fans probably expect this team to go deep into the tournament every year, which is a good thing because it means you guys are good every single year. But do you feel fan expectations?
I've been here for 23 years. Our expectations are never going to be lower than the fans.
Okay. You know, all right.
We have the highest of expectations, but in this new world, if you want to talk about fan expectations, I mean, that comes with the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's just the real world. You know, I did hear you guys mention the football team. Well, at the end of the day, this NIL world is real.
Yeah.
So, I mean, fans' expectations at times, not with our team. I'm not talking about us. We need all the help we can get, and we love our fans, and our fans are part of the reasons why our players come to San Diego State. I mean, Bayhawks Arena last night was absolutely rocking.
Yeah.
I mean, to be in that environment, to have that environment, it's one of the best in the country. It's arguably the best on the West Coast. I mean, Bayhawks Arena is a special place to play, and with this NIL world, we've had some support. We need more support, but that's just the world we live in nowadays. That's every college program across the country.
Coach Velasquez, you know, as we're sitting here talking, and you mentioned, you know, the kind of the youth that you have on this roster, you know, I go back to the first half of last night's game. You guys get into the bonus pretty early, but aren't able to quite get to the line to kind of take advantage of that. Is that a sign of the youth that you have in there, or is that just kind of how the game was called there after that point?
That's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit, it's not just the youthfulness. I think it's the more the amount of time together.
Okay.
You know, I think when we get to that situation in January, it's not necessarily going to be the youthfulness. It's going to be more kind of, we can get this guy in this position, this space to go get fouled, you know, or, okay, instead of this mid-range, maybe I'm going to get to the rim and force myself to get to the foul line. I mean, to me, it's one of those things where at the end of the day, we played one real Division I game before last night.
Right.
So not only are we have a little bit of youthfulness amongst our team and trying to add so many new pieces. I mean, this is the most new pieces that we've ever added to a San Diego State team since 98, 99 when Coach Fisher took over.
Right.
I mean, this is about as much as new as we've ever been. We've usually been, like I had mentioned earlier, the more experienced teams. You know, we've had so much experience coming back. So this is all new, and it's something that we're going to continue to grow from. But, yeah, I think as we go along, I think it'll be easier to get to the foul line than it was last night when we didn't. You know, we drew those really early fouls early in the game.
Coach Dave Velasquez joins us here on Gwen and Chris, assistant men's basketball coach. And, Coach Velasquez, you know, you talked about, and we're all seeing it, we're all seeing the landscape change in all of college sports. And one of the things we've come to know for a fact is that a San Diego State Aztec men's basketball team usually starts to crystallize after the new year, you know, coming in January, February. Does that message get harder when you're having to bring in so many new faces? Because as you said, this used to be a university that you guys were usually the most experienced. And so having to hammer that in there may not been as such big task, but with so many new faces, you know, is that message harder to get across to the young men?
Well, no, we have a really coachable group. That's one of the things, you know, you talk about the transfers that came in here. They all came in here to win.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Nick Boyd playing against us in the Final Four and saw him the type of winning program we had, how together we were, our chemistry, or Jared Coleman Jones, who came from Middle Tennessee State, and before that was Northwestern. He had not gone to the NCAA tournament. He wants to go. You know, Wayne McKinney from down the street, he wants to go. He wants to play in the NCAA tournament. So you have all these guys, plus the freshmen and the new guys, along with the guys coming back. I mean, this team, you come here to win. So it's easy to, you know, I don't want to say it's easy, but they understand, you know, the task at hand, which is we have to win. And, yeah, we are going to play our best basketball in January and February. I think if you look it up, I think Coach Dutcher and Bill Self are the two winningest coaches in the last 8 years in February. I mean, our teams have gotten better and better throughout the season, and we're not expecting anything different from this year. But our teams also understand that there is a – when you come to San Diego State, not only do you come here to win, you're expected to win, and, you know, that's what our mindset is moving forward. And, you know, getting to watch film with half the team today, and we had the day off from practice, but the guys stopped by the office, and, you know, nobody's happy. You know, there's no moral victories here. The job is to win every game we play, but at the same time, we learned a lot of great lessons last night.
What is it about Coach Dutch that seemingly attracts these type of players? I mean, because at least from the outside looking at it, it doesn't seem like the type of mindset that frequent San Diego State's men's basketball program is a mindset that is out there in abundance, but yet the Aztecs seem to find these guys that fit. What is it about this program and about Coach Dutch and the staff that seemingly attracts these type of players?
You know, I think a lot of people just want to be treated the right way, and at the same time, they want to be held accountable and also be a part of something special. And Coach Dutcher, the way he can handle, whether we had won last night or lost last night, I could be the first to tell you, being around him this long, he'd be the same person no matter what.
Yeah,
you know, and he doesn't ride this crazy roller coaster ride. And for players, and you've been there before. You've had managers in the past that when you guys are winning a hot streak, you think you're the greatest hitter and outfielder in the world. And then when you guys are playing bad, you know, you're the worst. I mean, he's never likes that. And I think players that starts to kind of. That reputation gets out there, especially from former guys and guys that have been around him. He's about as normal of a head coach as you can be in any sport, and especially in college basketball. And he's just a great person, high character. And our guys, you know, the families, they want their kids to be around that, you know, and their sons. And so it's there's a lot, but the winning culture is probably number one. And then just Coach Dutcher, who he is as a person. And, you know, we try to all carry ourselves that way.
We're talking to Coach Velasquez, assistant men's basketball coach for San Diego State. And I wanted to ask, because you were saying that the team is pretty young right now. Is it almost easier to coach up a bunch of younger players, or is it easier to deal with the veterans who you can teach in a different way? Because I'm a little curious about which side is easier to get through to.
You know, I think it's always easier to get through to the veterans because, for the most part, at least in a program like ours, they've had success.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're not having success, you can always point to, well, here's you at the best version of yourself. And you can almost show them in the same situation, in the same jersey, you know, with the same coaching staff. With a new team, you know, they come in wide-eyed, but a lot of times you don't know what you don't know. And so some of the situations we were in last night was the first time we were in that situation together. And the way we ask them to guard defensively and how hard that is, and then offensively how we want them to play, it's a lot of times with the new guys, they're just – you don't know what you don't know, and that's not their fault. And that's why most teams that are experienced and together, they have early success, especially this time of the year. But as the year goes on, once teams get, you know, 10 to 12 to 15 games under their belt, then they start to find a rhythm. They've learned a lot of, you know, lessons throughout the year that we've been mentioning. And at that point, you can get to them with the veteran team, like a last year's team. You know, hey, Darion, I remember how you looked when you took us to a Final Four and you were the South Region MVP. That ain't that person right now. You know, like, you know, you can kind of point to those things a little bit easier. And even you know, and there's other guys. You know, I use Nathan Mensah as an example for our new guys all the time. You know, I felt like Nathan at times would just be like, I'll let this ball in the post. I know he can't score on me. But it's like, well, when the ball goes in the post, then we have to shrink. We have to do all these things. Nathan, keep the ball out of the post.
Right.
And you got to show him games where he had kept the ball out of the post. So.
That is funny.
A little bit easier on the coach veteran teams.
It's like when I have to coach up Chris or something. I have to bring Chris and Tony. I have to bring back the audio and say, yes, you guys did say this. 5 o'clock football hour is presented by Buffalo Wild Wings, where B-dubs is football. Visit Buffalo Wild Wings every Tuesday for buy one, get one, half off traditional wings.
I certainly took advantage of some B-dubs over the weekend. It was quite tasty.
I've been trying
to convince my family to go there, but they had given me the stiff arm for like the last couple of weeks. So
I'll go with you.
I made them go.
Oh, okay.
And we all had some wings, extra crispy.
Ooh, extra crispy,
I'm
huh?
I'm a dry rub guy myself, so they're quite tasty. Nonetheless, good show today. Back at it again tomorrow. Maybe LO is on. I think he's on, at least on early, right? Or is he not on at all? You know what? We're just going to wait and see.
Because... No, I think he's on early because he's already there.
Okay, therefore, we'll be all three of us tomorrow. You guys enjoy your night. Back at it again tomorrow. Take
Scraby
care.
Show next.
Oh, Scraby next.
Scraby's next.